When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network. New shows every day. Find us at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Hello and welcome to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast, your trusted source for all things San Jose Sharks on the Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Nick Floor. Joining me as always is Editor-in-Chief of San Jose Hockey Now and my co-host, Shang Peng. Shang, how's it going tonight?
Very good. Not so good for the Sharks, of course. They lost to the Kraken, but good for myself. I have enjoyed my trip here in Seattle. Thank you very much, readers, for contributing to my tip jar. So I could check out a game in Seattle, San Jose's first game here. And again, I put out a link this morning, but my new tip jar is Venmo. Still trying to figure out what to do with that because PayPal, their charges were too high. So trying out Venmo for now. And Venmo is at Shang Peng. And figure out the future of the tip jar. So
we'll figure it out. As long as the funds are being held safely by Mushu, all finances will be held accordingly. So, and again, it does seem.
I promise you guys that that your funds are not going to Mushu's dog food. So I promise that.
But always the best for Mushu. Always the best. Of course, it always seems that the Bay Area teams always struggle against Seattle teams, and that's just history. Just biting me in the butt, you know, especially as a 49ers fan watching an abysmal Seahawks team sweep the 49ers this year. And so far, Seattle Kraken, a abysmal hockey team, you could say, bottom of the standings hockey team, so far sweeping the Sharks, just really, really rips my heart out, stomps it on the ground. So thanks for that. Thanks, Sharks.
On the other hand, it was a fun experience at Climate Pledge Arena today. Pretty good pregame show. I think everybody is trying to emulate the Vegas thing. Vegas definitely raised the level of pregame shows and whatnot and presentation. I don't know if it's quite as exciting as Vegas is, but it's a pretty good show. It's worth the experience. And obviously, Climate Pledge Arena, it's if you guys have been to Seattle, it's right next to the Space Needle. So it's right next to a lot of cool stuff, and it's not kind of in the middle of nowhere like where the Coyotes play, that sort of thing. So it's a fun experience, so definitely check out a game up here.
All right, and of course, before we get into this episode, we always like to note the date. It is beautiful January 20th, and beautifully cold at least, and 11:30 is when we're starting this one. So another late night podcast for everyone who's listening on a Friday or over the weekend.
Want to make sure that we have a podcast every week here for you guys.
Yeah, we have we had some celebrations this week. That's why we have an extra day coming out.
Yeah, happy birthday to Trevor, Nick.
Yeah, thanks. For those listening, that's my son. He had his birthday on Wednesday, which was, I guess, yesterday. But if you're listening to this 2 days ago, the big four. So,
yep. And hopefully you guys will like this episode. We took a little time with this one. We did a lot of research back in the past for some of this stuff. And so that's another reason why we are recording late on a Thursday night. And you know, usually we release a podcast today.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, since we're on the topic of it, let's just get right into it. So on this week's episode, we're going to talk about the roller coaster ride that has been Timo Meier's career and his ascendance into a bona fide all-star. Then we'll lay out his possible future and price tag with and for the Sharks. Of course, jumping into it, we like to, you know, we usually start off with like current news involving COVID protocol, but this is the Timo Meier episode, and Timo isn't in COVID protocol. He's in score everything all the time mode as of right now. But we wanted to start this off. We want to take the, we're going to turn the clock back a little bit. We're not going to go so far as to his rookie season, but we have a clip here that we want to play. We pulled some audio from some past interviews with players, as well as some more recent interview. And we also have quotes from coaches, and Shang has quotes from scouts. And like he said, we wanted to put together a very thorough episode to detail Timo Meier's just eruption onto the scene for San Jose. So
to celebrate his five goals.
Yeah, exactly. To celebrate the we're going to call it the Timo trick at this point, because five goals hasn't been done in over 20 plus years in the NHL. It's just a first time in Sharks history, of course. 31 plus years as a franchise, numerous amounts of goals scored, and finally we got a guy who's able to just find the back of the net. And of course, Shang, who else but your favorite team growing up? So
oh,
it just makes it a little bit more fun for me, and especially Sharks fans. That dagger and then the twist right there in the
well. Hey, you know what? I threw out my trolley tweets with my reportage of Jonathan Quick's non-Timo Meier save percentage throughout the game. So
yes, we loved those. We loved those. So first, we're gonna start off with a quote here from Logan Couture. This is back in the first month of the 2019-2020 season. Basically, he was asked about a bad change and a couple of guys staying out too long.
Put it on.
Yep, you're right. All right, here it is.
Just an inexcusable change. Two guys that stayed out too long, looking for offense. It's a play, or it's a selfish play, and that doesn't need to be part of this team, so we'll figure that out.
All right, Shang. So that's a nice quote there from Logan. Basically, nice is you should have, for those, I wish you would have seen, you can always go back to the Fear the Finn article that you actually posted, that you tweeted out the video of it as well. His face when he was talking about that, just gorgeous to watch, by the way, because he is not a very happy camper. So
yeah, well, I mean, let's think back to that time. So this is the 2019-20 season. This is the first season after the Sharks had just made it to the conference finals. They had just re-signed Erik Karlsson to an 8-year extension. They were still thinking that they were a top team in the West. But the underbelly of the Sharks had sort of been ripped out during the offseason. Obviously, Joe Pavelski leaving. But also, too, Jonas Donskoy, Gustav Nyquist. So they lost three top nine, in the case of Nyquist and Pavelski, top six or top line forwards right there. Joe Thornton got another year older. And going into this season, the Sharks' hopes to contend, a lot of it was on Timo Meier and Kevin LeBanc taking that next step. And in this, in that clip with Couture, and remember too, this is Couture's first month as a captain, so I think that even Couture is sort of coming to not grips, but he's learning to grasp the responsibility of his job. Kind of like, I don't know if Couture would lay out his younger teammates who did make a grievous mistake, but I don't know if he would do that a couple years after this fact. But essentially on this play, what happened was, I believe it was an overtime in Buffalo, and Eichel scored the game winner for the Sabres, and part of it was because Meier and LeBanc, who were on together, just took way too long to get off the ice.
All right, and you mentioned, Shang, that if, you know, Couture a few years later wouldn't be so quick to essentially throw his younger teammates under the bus.
Well, like again, that, I don't want to say I don't think Couture did anything
wrong. Well, he holds them accountable.
Here.
We know.
Yeah,
that.
He's holding them accountable, and they did something wrong. And these are guys, like I said, that the Sharks were counting on to grow up fast, because of salary cap reasons. And hey, you know what? They had great 2018-19s, both of them, right? Timo scored 30 goals as a 22-year-old. Kevin LeBanc scored 56 points. So it wasn't unreasonable for them to kind of look at these guys and say, hey, if we can get a little bit more out of them, then we can make up for losing Joe Pavelski, losing Donskoy, losing Nyquist. I mean, not make up entirely for it, but make up a bit for it.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. And so let's fast forward the clock to that beautiful, was it a Monday night? Beautiful Monday night in January of the year 2022. Timo Meier is waking up for a 1 o'clock game, a very rare 1 o'clock start, especially on the West Coast for either team. Just a very rare start. And, you know, he figured, hey, if we're going to do a 1 o'clock start, we might as well make some history. Goes out and just scores a measly 5 goals for the Sharks en route to a 6-2 win against the LA Kings, where they were pretty heavily outshot, outchanced in that game. But Timo Meier just, if he shot the puck with a blindfold on, there was a pretty 50% shot. It was going in the net. So we go to the post-game interview with Couture.
This is actually on Wednesday. This wasn't post-game. This was a couple days later.
Me. Yeah, after the game, Wednesday, we're talking about a completely different side of the coin with Logan Couture talking about Timo Meier's play, and we're going to play that clip for you right now.
Honest, he's done all this on his own. I mean, he everyone's gone through tough stretches the last few years as a team individually, and it's not easy, but the thing I love about Timo is he came in camp this year with a great attitude, ready to work. He's got that fire where you can tell he wants to win every game, and he wants to puck, and he wants to be the guy that makes the play, and you appreciate that when your best players want the puck, want to be on the ice, and he's been huge for us all season.
So, Shang, pretty good marks there from the captain of your team, you'd say?
Yep. Yeah, and so what we're going to get into now is we're going to trace Timo's kind of evolution. How did we get here, kind of? You know, where are we now? How do we get here? And like you pointed out, Nick, a couple days ago yourself, the Sharks are the only team in the league with two 20-goal scorers, and that's Timo Meier and Tomas Hertl. And Timo Meier is going to the All-Star game for his first All-Star appearance. Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about, you know, how we got here, you know, we have to go back a bit. You know, and it's really kind of you can learn so much, I think, from what's going on with the Timo Meier and his story. And so let's go back a little bit here.
All right. If I had a rewind clock noise or some sort of record scratch sound, I would hit the rewind button and rewind these last couple of years. So we're going to start in 2019, late 2019, which is the beginning of that perennial season, that post-Western Conference Finals season.
Right.
November. Sorry, go ahead, Shane.
Yeah, I was just going to – sorry to interrupt, but this is from November 2019, but a couple weeks after Couture had already skewered Meier and LeBanc for that change.
Yeah, exactly. And it obviously his words didn't fall on deaf ears. Peter DeBoer, November 2019, like you had stated – actually demoted Timo Meier. This is something that people will probably recall that happened recently with Kevin LeBanc. Demoted him down to the fourth line. And we have a quote here from Pete, and I quote, "Some of those guys played in support roles in the past, benefited from playing behind some key guys. And now they're the key guys. With that comes some pressure to produce." And that kind of reinforces what you had said. The Sharks had expected both Kevin LeBanc and Timo Meier to grow into the impact roles and not just be support roles.
Right. And obviously, you know, we're two quotes in already. It's been a month into the season, and they're both very dire signs that neither Meier or LeBanc were ready to step up. Meier had been sent down to play with Lukáš Radio and Barclay Goodrow when he was still a fourth liner. And this was not a good sign. And this is part of the reason why, not to put it all on Meyer and LeBanc's plate, obviously, but this is a Peter DeBoer quote. He was going to get fired in a month.
Yeah. He was obviously trying to kickstart the guys and, you know, kick them into full gear. Because like you had said, the expectation for this Sharks team was like, okay, we didn't re-sign Pavelski. We didn't re-sign Gustav Nyquist. We allowed these impact players to walk. It's your turn. We're putting our chips on the table. Right. We're going all in on our guys.
Right, and I think the hope was that the team, you know, the team wouldn't be as loaded as it was in 2018-19, obviously, but that they were going to be a still a competitive quality, you know, playoff caliber team, as Sharks fans and the organization had, you know, gotten used to over the last 15 years.
Yeah, confident enough to re-sign Erik Karlsson, forfeiting that year's draft pick, which then turned into Tim Stützle. So let's fast forward a month and a half to the end of December 2019, or the low point, essentially, of Timo Meier's season here against Los Angeles. So he was essentially...
We have a new coach.
Yeah, new coach. By the way, let's not forget about that. He was benched in the third period and overtime. This is something he's all too familiar with, and this is a coach from interim head coach, now current head coach, Bob Bugner. You can't dress 12 forwards and have 8 or 9 show up. We had a couple guys not sticking with the structure, not playing within the team system, end quote. And if I haven't heard that consistently over the last 2+ years, I don't know what more else I could have heard. Like, that has been the MO of this team's struggle to buy into that defense-first system. He also goes on to say, we can't keep going on like this, beating a dead horse. You have to send some messages, end quote.
We thought that Timo Meier was going to get scratched the next game. And I'm just talking about the reporter buzz, you know, between Curtis Pashelka and Kevin Kurz and anyone else. We just sort of thought, oh, you know, Timo's going to get healthy scratched. He did not get healthy scratch, but this was teetering on the edge of that.
Yeah, I mean, once you get to that point, I'm pretty sure Lucas Radil was the guy at that point who was consistently on the healthy scratch, insert into the fourth line type of thing. And if you have Timo Meier on par with that level of play per, you know, to their expectation, you're not doing too good for yourself for the Sharks, and that kind of showed as that season. Just a few days later, end of December, again, the 28th, again, 2019, still that struggling year for the Sharks. Logan Couture actually says, and I quote here again, the goal for the San Jose Sharks was to have those guys step into big minutes, but it's been a tough season, end quote. And again, he's referring to guys like Timo, guys like Kevin LeBanc, these guys that were continued to be relied on to produce, and unfortunately for the Sharks, weren't.
Yep. And so this sort of lost season continued. And so in February 2020, I wrote an article for Fair to Fin titled Behind Timo Meier's Lost Season. And in the story, I had a quote from an NHL scout. And the scout says of Timo Meier, he's still a power forward, but it's the B game. Last year, you know, talking about his 30-goal season, last year was the A game.
So we're talking about, of course, A game. We're referring to that Western Conference Finals year, that impact year where everyone was scoring. The Sharks couldn't not score, and the only thing that beat them out to the Stanley Cup Finals there was a surging St. Louis Blues team that also could not be stopped. So we all know how that season ends, Shang, in utter disappointment. I think worst Sharks finish in over a decade easily, almost two. And so now we're jumping into the off season at that point, right?
Right, right. But before we get quite there, though, you know, one of the funny things about that season is that I think that Timo maybe got a little bit of a pass that year because it was just 1 year, but also too, he actually ended up leading the team in points. funny enough, it was not a great year for them. So even in that sort of bad year, he ended up leading the team in points. He actually won the Sharks Player of the Year. That's a media voted award. I actually did not vote for him that year. I voted for Evander Kane because Kane was a more consistent player than Meyer that year. Mm-hmm. And I think though that because Timo still, you know, got over 20 goals, this is the season, of course, that got shortened because of COVID when the Sharks were on the road in Chicago. But you know, Timo still scored 20 goals in 70 games, but it wasn't a good year for him, even though he again led the team in points and won a team MVP. But I think another way to look at it is that it underscored how much talent Timo has. And to be able to do those things in a year that, again, you know, going back to the quote by the scout, you know, it's his B game this year. You know, Timo Meier won a team MVP with his B game. And it also tells you how bad the Sharks were that year, and they were very bad. But it also tells you, too, just the amount of talent that we're dealing with when we're talking about Timo Meier.
Yeah, and it's if you're able to, again, this is all in hindsight, but if you're able to pull apart that sort of information from the scouts where you're like, he's telling you this is his B game, like you had just mentioned, and he's leading the team in almost every statistical category at that point, like, one, it's reflecting how terrible the Sharks are at that point in their, you know, injury-riddled season. They had Couture, Hurdle, Carlson's groin, everything going on. The sky's the limit with this kid.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of hope still. So, you know, we jump into the off season, right, after the 2019-20 season. Obviously, it was a long off season between when the Sharks March 2020, when that season ended. Obviously, COVID, the bubble, which the Sharks weren't a part of, to the beginning of the, you know, what was the 2020-21 season that started in January 2021.
Yeah.
But in the off season, the Sharks basically add nobody over the summer. They lose Joe Thornton. Their big free agent signings up front are 41-year-old Patrick Marleau and Matt Nieto. So basically the Sharks are trying to run it back again and hope that this is the year for Timo Meier. This is the year for Kevin LeBanc.
This was the debut of Noah Gregor at 3C, if I remember correctly.
It was, yep.
We all remember how that went, so... So yeah, we're jumping forward here in time here. Well, I guess in the story here, we're going chronologically there. February 20th, happy birthday, Mom. But February 20th, 2021, Timo's got 2 goals in 15 games. So it seems as though the Sharks are just repeating. Everything is repeating for the Sharks and in the worst possible way. And I have a quote here from head coach Bob Bugner, because Bob Bugner was given that extension. Head coach Bob Bugner, and I quote here, he says, he could dominate games. He knows that. That's obviously the end of the quote there. Bugner has spoken to Timo, and Timo knows that he can easily win these games, or he can dominate these games using his game specifically.
Yeah, and I think the other side of this quote is that he could dominate games, but the parentheses is, but he isn't.
Yeah,
and so like you said, it's we're just sort of repeating the same story from 2019-20, and actually, you know, Sharks fans, I think. If you think about it, really, the last 2 years have sort of really had a lot of the same trends. Everything sort of bled together. Obviously, COVID was a big part of the 2019-20 and the 2020-21 season. Martin Jones his continual poor substandard play was a part of all that. But the Sharks not helping Martin Jones out with with
896.
Consistent with that, and the Sharks team defense obviously not helping Jones out at all either. Disappointing performances from Timo Meier, from Kevin LeBanc, even Logan Couture being banged up. You know, Logan Couture played the second half of this 2020-21 season hurt. Tomas Hertl missed some time with COVID. You know, COVID took him out a bit for a couple weeks there. So I think if you make a, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with this year's Sharks, but clearly this is a different team this year. And whatever happens with this year's team, I think, you know, I would guess for fans, you know, I ask you, Nick, but, you know, the last 2 years have just been so forgettable and most ways, sort of like a track that's just sort of bled together, this long, interminable, you know, suffering, you know, musical score that just keeps going on. It's the same music, same crappy music, young players that can't play, veterans that you hope are younger players that you hope can be veterans like Myron LeBanc doing the same crap. And so anyway, you know, we're kind of repeating a theme here. So Nick, I'll let you jump to March a month later.
Yeah. Before we jump into March there, you're hitting the nail on the head, because when we're going through this chronologically, this is split up between two seasons,
right?
Two completely different seasons, but it feels as though this has just been one big, long, drawn-out, disappointing season for the Sharks. One, you had that shortened season in the beginning due to COVID. Then you had the long off-season where nothing happens, nothing of importance, of no real value happens. And then you have another COVID-shortened season, the 56-game season, where, again, nothing happens. It's just disappointment after disappointment. And like you said, it's just a broken record of a really bad song, and it's the only song that's available. And now we jump forward to the end of March of 2021. Timo's stat line is looking just as great as it did the year prior. 6 goals through 34 games, and at the, you know, Sharks head coach Bob Bugner, he confirms the diagnosis that day. He says, "It's easy as a forward to get a puck, sling it toward the net, and get a shot from the outside. But he's got to actually get inside, use that big body of his, and protect pucks and be around the net when the rebounds, the second and third chances come," end quote. So he's expecting Timo to use his body, use that power forward style to get inside and get those high danger chances that we so love, those slot shots, those inner slot shots.
So, yeah, if you as a Sharks fan, or like the scout that I talked to in the 2019-20 season, were unhappy with Timo's 2019-20, well, actually, Timo's going to have an even worse season here.
Yeah.
So 6 goals through 34 games. Do the math. That's 12 goals in 68 games. Remember that Timo scored 20-ish in 21, I think, in 70 games the year before. And so Timo is having an even worse season. And think about, you know, speaking about like a music song that keeps going on, you know, imagine that you have a jukebox and the only thing you can play is Dylan Gambrell as your third line center. You know, you're in trouble as a team. You know, we got, let's be honest here. You know, full respect to Dylan, who did his best in a difficult spot there. But so you're in a tough place. You know, like, so actually, you know, we talked about the song being the same with Timo Meier. Actually, the song got worse.
Yeah.
It started off kind of mediocre-ish. It's, you know, the 2019-20, the song was like, oh, that looks like Timo Meier out there. By the time we get to 2020-21, it looks like an imposter out there, at least most games. He still had some good games, but most games, this was not the Timo Meier that we saw in 2018-19.
Yeah, the jukebox is playing Friday by Rebecca Black on repeat. So someone goes and smacks the jukebox, and all of a sudden it starts skipping the word Friday over and over.
Exactly.
Like, no, it got worse. Remix Friday. No. So we go to May. We're jumping from March to May. And Timo then, he states himself, this is a quote from himself, "I know I have to be better. I expect myself to be way better," end quote. And at that point, Myers scored just 10 goals in 53 games. I mean, that's just bad.
Yeah.
There's no other way to really put that. And yeah. you're verging on, you're on the edge of the season. Like, the season's over at that point. You're not playing June hockey. And this guy, your first round pick, the guy you picked before Mikko Rantanen, just can't seem to find a way to put all the pieces together. He shows little flashes here and there. Maybe it's the system. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's the line mates. Maybe it's that. Who knows what it is, but it doesn't seem to be clicking for Timo. And so much to the point where even he himself comes out and says that he has to be better.
Right. And, you know, the setup here. So this is sort of the low point, I guess, for a Timo Meier, right?
Yeah.
And we had to go back kind of to, you know, where we started. So Timo Meier in 2018-19, he scored 30 goals as a 22-year-old, you know, looked like a star on the up and up. That offseason, 2019 offseason, was maybe the most impressive crop of RFA restricted free agent wingers in NHL history. Mitch Marner, Ratton, who you mentioned, Matthew Tkachuk, Patrick Laine. They all came up for extensions during that off season, and I said back then, 2018-19, that I thought that Meier belonged in that group, Marner, Ratanen, Tkachuk, Laine. You know, maybe in a lower echelon of that group. Maybe, you know, he's not. You know, I don't think he's better than, necessarily, even now, maybe better than Rico Ratton, but he belonged to that group, though, which, you know, was sort of a out there statement then, just because Meier played, maybe because he played for the Sharks and he played behind a lot of great players in 2018-19, so he didn't get the fanfare.
Yeah.
But Meier was really, really good in 2018-19. Actually, I ran into a scout today at the Kraken game, and we got to talking about Timo. And he actually said he thought that Timo Meier was better in 2018-19 than he has been this season. And I did not agree with that because, and I mentioned this to the scout, and the scout actually did kind of take my point here, that in 2018-19, Timo was playing protected minutes. He wasn't counted on to do that, you know, to carry the load, because he had Joe Pavelski in front of him. He had Tomas Hertl in front of him. He had Logan Couture in front of him. You know, that season, stat that I've repeated a lot, the Sharks had 9 50-point scorers that season. No other team had more than 5. And of that 9, the 9 50-point scorers, Erik Karlsson and Jonas Donskoi weren't in that group. So that was a deep, deep, deep team that Timo, you know, didn't have to face the toughest assignments, the toughest defensive centers necessarily. He was protected, and he was protected to have that kind of breakout season in 2018-19, and with hopes that he could, of course, carry that on into the next year, which he didn't. And then he didn't carry it on into the next year after that. But yeah, one of the points that we can keep stressing, and we stressed a little bit earlier, is that Timo Meier, even in these kind of lost last two seasons, had so much talent. And so that's why after 2018-19, I thought that he very much belonged in that echelon of elite wingers that became free agents that summer. And through the last couple of years, actually, that quote where you just said, of Meier saying, "I expect myself to be way better," I believe that was an article I wrote where I said, here's why you don't trade Timo Meier right now.
Hey, we want to take a quick break to thank this week's sponsor, DraftKings. We're on to the divisional round of the NFL playoffs, and DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, is celebrating with a huge odds boost for new customers. Counting down to Super Bowl 56, new customers can get 56-1 odds on any team. Bet just $5 and get 280 in free bets if your team wins. And don't worry, if Sportsbook isn't available in your state yet, you can still get in on the action of the divisional round. Because everyone, and when I say everyone, I mean everyone, can play for huge cash prizes with DraftKings daily fantasy football contests. It's simple, folks. Just download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use promo code THPN, and get 56-1 odds on any NFL team. Bet just $5 and win 280 in free bets if your team wins. That's promo code THPN for 56-1 odds at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only, new customers only, minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required, one per customer, restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned that, because what starts swirling around in that offseason?
Yep.
Timo Meier trade rumors. Because Lord knows that's what we needed on our plate to push away our one of our best offensive pieces for three quarters on the dollar, like we've talked about so much. And so there were some rumblings of a trade during the actually in the middle of the NHL draft in the first round, just like, you know, I believe it was around pick two or three. I was covering the NHL draft with Dylan, you know, on the Stick Hungry podcast, and then we start getting all these tweets that there's you know, you even have Kevin Weeks tweeting about rumblings with New Jersey, the possibility of Timo Meier being traded to New Jersey. And so Shane, you actually have some information on that as well.
Well, yeah, and I wrote it back then that I never really bought the New Jersey stuff. Just in general, teams, they still like the player, Timo Meier. You know, he's still just, at the time, just 24. And, you know, had a couple disappointing seasons. But again, the talent is clear. Everybody walked away from 2018-19 thinking that this was going to be the next San Jose Sharks star. And so people liked the player, but of course, people around the league did not like that contract. You know, at that point, Timo Meier. Oh, and that's another part, of course, that we hadn't quite mentioned, that in the offseason, 2019 offseason, after his big year, Timo Meier signed a 4-year, $24 million contract. Not a huge contract, but still a very good contract that kind of signaled that, hey, you're a guy that needs to step up and be one of our best players. I think after Timo signed that contract, he became the third highest paid Shark forward after Couture and Kane, actually making more than Tomas Hertl, because Tomas Hertl is still at 5.625. So that kind of tells you kind of what the expectations now are for Timo Meier. He's not on his entry level or whatever anymore, where, you know, he's not, you know, he's not bringing home the bread. He's bringing home the bread now, and he's expected to produce. So Timo put himself in this position where there are rumblings, even though I didn't really buy the reason why I didn't buy the rumors is just because the Timo's contract was bad. And also, too, for the Sharks, why would they just give him away? You know, there's a talent poor Sharks team, especially up front. Why would you just give him away? You know, if Calgary's calling and they're saying, hey, we'll give you Matthew Tkachuk for Timo Meier, okay, you take that, obviously. But nobody was offering that kind of deal for Timo Meier. Like you said, you know, the offers, I hadn't heard any of them, but I would assume that they're all three quarters on a dollar, because that's what you do as the opposition. You look at a team's weaknesses and you try to jump on it, because everybody, again, knew Timo Meier's talent, but the contract was, you know, just as appealing as Meier's talent is, you know, the contract was just as unappealing.
And, you know, New Jersey would be a perfect landing spot for Timo in that sense. If you put the scope on, you get a guy with a couple years remaining on a not so friendly contract, but you look at New Jersey and they've got the cap space to afford it. So you're shooting for the upside there. And if you're the Sharks, you don't give in to the stupidity of giving away one of your highest ceiling players for, like we said, not even close to true value. So
yeah, well, like I said, I don't necessarily think you. I don't know. I don't necessarily believe so much that New Jersey was as into it as people think. But maybe I'm wrong about that. But I do know that the contract was a poison pill.
Gotcha. And you actually you have a quote here from a scout, correct?
Yep. Yeah. So in the summer, I started working on a Timo Meier story and a little bit about just what had sort of happened to him and what was going on with him. I never finished it in part because then a lot of Evander Kane started popping up, and so I had to write other things. Mm-hmm. But I thought that this was a fascinating quote from this scout. And just FYI, I've used the word scout multiple times here. It's not all the same guy, just if you're curious. This is the third different scout that I'm referring to in this podcast. So just so you know that you're hearing similar opinions about the player, but from three different people. You know, this isn't just one guy and his, you know, crusade to crush Timo Meier's trade value. So anyway, this scout said, and I actually hadn't used this in an article before. I was maybe going to use it this year, but anyway, we'll just use it here. So this is the first time I put this out there. But so this is Timo Meier the last couple of years, this scout's thoughts on Meier. He's a bit of a polarizing player because he can be a game changer and bring it. But on his character, I've heard some things. I don't think he's driving culture. I don't think he's a bad kid, but I've heard that sometimes he doesn't always dig in. He's not always a good pro. He's still young. Just given what he's paid and what his next contract is looking at, it's tough.
That's pretty indicative of how the whole Sharks locker room was at that offseason. You know, if you really kind of boil it down to brass tacks, if you try to peel the blinders off, it seemed as though there was some issues in that Sharks locker room. It's very evident, especially going into, you know, we're at the point in this, in our little storyline here, our timeline of Timo Meier, the Timo line, you could call it, where, like you said, you didn't release this quote because all the Evander Kane stuff starts coming out. And then all the news starts coming out that the players don't want him back because of just the toxicity in the locker room. So not providing excuses for Timo here, but it's hard to be a culture driver when there's a complete opposite culture driver in your presence. You know, you're just there to score goals, collect your paycheck, and go home, because what's the point of driving culture if you don't have veterans around you that are also doing the same?
And so, yeah, there were stories too of, you know, that Timo Meier was, you know, one of the few people that might have, you know, been considered Evander Kane's friend. And some of these things that, you know, these quotes about Meier, you know, they don't sound that far different than things we heard about Kane, just in terms of polarizing, not driving culture. You know, maybe not always a good pro. So I don't want to connect. It's too obvious a connection. And without anything certain, I don't want to connect that, hey, Evander Kane is gone, that's why Timo Meier is Timo Meier now. I think that's too simple a narrative.
Yeah.
But I think that there was some suggestion that there could be a little something there, though, that Evander Kane may not necessarily have been the best influence on a Timo Meier, perhaps.
Yeah, that's essentially what I was alluding to. It didn't seem as though there was many positive influences to continue that culture-driving personality trait into the youth, or so it seems. Again, this is just me being a stupid fan here and speculating on the podcast, but I think it's important to kind of note that, because I'm sure people listening to that quote that's one of the very first things that they'll think of. And maybe that not so great influence around him allowed him to get away with things or do things that he didn't necessarily want to. And even Bob came out and said that maybe he allowed players to do things that they weren't, or gave people too long of a leash, whether it be on the ice or off the ice. So that could be just Evander Kane. That could be to a multiple people and multiple situations that we don't know about and we might not ever know about. So just my thoughts, just talking out loud on that one. So let's fast forward again, Shang. Let's get to the good stuff. Let's get to the good stuff. Everyone's sitting here. It's like 40-plus minutes. They're like, well, I thought we were talking about Timo Meier's 5 goals, and it's just been bad. Well, we're finally getting to the good stuff. The eruption, right? Timo Meier, the volcano, has arrived. It's the year 2021. The season's starting. There's not a lot of expectation for anyone, especially from Sharks fans. We're like, oh, boy. Here comes that song again.
How many goals did you think Timo was going to score this year if you were to put money on it?
I can't
even
tell you. I was like, if he's at 30, I'm excited. If he can get to 30, I'm pumped, because then he's trending up.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been supportive of his talent. I think that's clear in my writing of him. But obviously, 2 years of a guy that did not play as engaged as you would expect with that many expectations on him, I wouldn't have figured that he was going to meet those expectations.
Yeah.
That would have been my guess. But I think if he had hit 30, and he obviously is on pace for more than that, but if he had hit 30, I think that you'd be overjoyed, because at least he's making his money back, or he's making, you know, he's providing the, at least the appropriate value for his contract, at least. Even if he hits 25-ish, right, after what he had last season. Last season, he was on pace for 16. At least that's an upward trend.
Yeah, he breaks the 20 goals or 25 goals, and you're like, all right, we're moving up. We're progressing. Yeah. Now he's just casually sitting at 21 halfway through the season. So let's do the math. Halfway through the season, 21. Funny enough, how many games that he's missed, though, due to COVID protocol. But 21. We're at game 41 now, finished up here with Seattle, 21 goals. That's 42 goals. That's a great campaign for a guy who's coming off a really bad campaign. So,
right.
So here we are. We have another quote here, a lovely quote, of course. Mid-November of this current season, so mid-November 2021.
Yeah, Timo's off to a quick start, but I think that people aren't quite tuned into it yet, because they had sort of forgotten just how talented he is.
Yeah, talent. The tales of talented Timo, and I believe this is a quote from Bob Bugner. Correct? Okay. Yeah. So he says, mid-November again of this season, 2021, we had a challenging face-to-face at the end of the year last year, an exit meeting. We sat with Timo a lot last year, trying to talk about the details of his game. I thought he put a lot of pressure on himself last year. Sometimes when we talked, it was more confrontational. This year, he's more accepting of the teaching and the help. This is the best hockey I've seen him play. Like, just stunning. Absolutely stunning. One, as a quote from a head coach who's continuously, I don't want to say, obviously he's not throwing him under the bus, but he's just, it shows, you know, like we talked about before, the demotion down to the fourth line, the benching in that third period and overtime, and to see him rise to the occasion. Now, I don't know how many 23 and 24 year olds you know that listen all that well as far as like confrontational, but this is something that I think, especially with Timo and just young adults nowadays, that it takes that time. You got to have that patience. You got to figure out how to talk with your guys, how to get through to your guys, especially as a head coach on a team that's struggling. And it takes two to tango. It's a two-way street. And I think both Bob as a head coach and Timo Meier as a player both matured together and really developed a significantly better relationship to help each other out mutually. Timo learning more, accepting of the teaching and the help of those around him, and Bob maybe being a little bit more patient, being a little bit better with his guys in that sense.
I think a lot of it too, you know, we talk about the last couple of years when Timo was struggling and Timo not appearing to be a culture driver and things like that, right? Yeah. Bob was trying to hold him accountable. Peter DeBoer was trying to hold him accountable. I think when we talk about, you know, where Bob may have lost the script a little bit and maybe not held guys accountable, I think that's probably more veterans, more like an Evander Kane. The young guys we saw with Kevin LeBanc and Timo Meier, that Bob Buchner has been pretty consistent, actually, in terms of just talking about them in the media, you know, letting us know, and challenging the players through that, you know, that they have to be better, benchings and that sort of thing, right? Have been pretty consistent with the young players, because even though things are falling apart around them, Bob Buchner is still trying to instill sort of a winning mindset and expectations for a Timo Meier. And so it was a struggle over the last couple of years, obviously, like Bob Buchner mentioned here. But it was all work, though, to try to get this Timo Meier out. This, you know, this sort of, you know, again, Sharks fans may have doubted Timo Meier's talent, but the Sharks organization, I don't think, has ever doubted Timo Meier's talent. And it just was a matter of how do you get it out, and especially in a culture or situation where things weren't the most positive. It wasn't the most positive atmospheres in the Sharks locker room over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and you're seeing that growth for Timo both on and off the ice here. And now we're moving on forward in the timeline to everyone's favorite part, the big five-goal night. And unfortunately for me and a lot of people, I was at work. I was listening to the game, Sharks radio broadcast by, you know, Dan Ruzanowski, fan of the podcast, by the way. We did have him on for an interview. Feel free to go back. Previous episode a few months ago, we were able to bring Dan on. It's a beautiful interview, obviously. Best sounding guy on the podcast, hands down, no doubt there. But it was just like I said before, it seemed like, no matter what happened, if he shot the puck, it was going in the back of the net. It did not matter. And I got a quote here from Tomas Hertl. I believe this is after that game, correct?
It's after the game, yep.
After that game. And Hertl says, before, he was always up and down. He was skating. He was on the puck one night. Then otherwise, he was kind of nowhere. This year, he's there for us every night. That's what the best players in the NHL do. And that's a hell of a quote from one of your most veteran leaders, from your line mate, your center, the heartthrob of San Jose, you know, arguably with Mario Ferraro. There's a nice competition there between best-looking Shark, of course. But just the maturation of Timo Meier, the goal scorer and the NHLer, is known now. The NHL's been put on blast. It's been put on notice. Like, he's here. He has arrived.
Right. And that's exactly actually what I was going to say, that before Timo scored those five goals, he was already having an amazing season. And he had already been picked for the All-Star team. So people were noticing to some degree, but I don't think that people quite realized just how good a season he was having until he scored five goals.
Oh, it was everywhere, too. I loved it. Front page from Mercury News, beating out the headline for the 49ers' wild card victory over the fumbling, bumbling Dallas Cowboys. You have a record night for Timo Meier. It's all over TSN. It's all over ESPN. Everyone knows who Timo Meier is. I got people at my work saying, hey, some Sharks guy did something pretty good the other night. I'm like, bet your ass he did. He just scored five goals. Are you kidding me? This guy's crazy.
I joked, but it was one of those joking, not joking things, that Timo Meier was the ESPN.com a headline. You know, Meier scores five goals. And I joked that was the first non-Evander Kane headline on ESPN.com that I had seen, you know, in how long. And wasn't an attack on necessarily even on Evander or anything, but it was more just, you know, like it or not, that's negative news. That's whatever was happening with Evander Kane. Every time he hit the headlines, it was something that made the Sharks look bad.
Yeah,
like it or not, right? And so the Sharks were in the headlines for a lot of reasons, you know, with a negative light cast upon them throughout the summer, throughout the early part of the fall when we're still dealing with Evander Kane's suspension and him going to the AHL. And anytime there was national news about the Sharks, it was usually about Evander Kane and usually something negative. Finally here, though, with Timo Meier, though, something positive.
Yeah, you got Doug and Hasso. They're over there just pumping the news channels. Come on, report this stuff. Do it. You see this guy? He's amazing. Look at him. He's beautiful. They got, like, the Timo head, like the bobbleheads. They got the Timo Meier alarm clocks and everything going. But we have we got a quote here from Bugner, and he said, in regards to Timo, this is again after that 5-goal game, he's naturally gifted. He's bigger, stronger, faster, and shoots harder than most guys in the league. And really quick before I finish the rest of this quote, I believe Timo was second in the hardest shot just behind Mario Ferraro.
Was he? Oh, okay. I don't remember
second,
that.
Right, nice. Behind. Okay. I was there. I remember that.
Yes.
But in the...
you were there.
In that skill showcase, Mario Ferraro, obviously just a strong man, obviously, much like Timo. But Timo was second place, if I do recall, in that. Not by much either. So he does have one hell of a shot. We just might not see it because he doesn't do a whole lot of one-timers per se. But Bob goes on to say, I don't take a lot of credit for it other than just trying to make him a 200-foot player. Timo deserves all the credit. He's put a lot of hard work in. He's got to commit to that, and he did. And compare that to what I said 20 minutes ago about what Bob was talking about Timo. Mm-hmm. You know, he knows he can be better. He wants to do this. He wants to do that. It just
beating
seems
a
like
dead
the
horse.
Sharks, yeah, beating a dead horse. They were trying to break him out of his mold to try to get him to evolve as a player, go through his Pokemon evolution, you know, whatever it may be. But their electric little Pikachu's now a Raichu. And it's kind of not fitting, but it's what's the word I'm looking for? Is it humility? It's just being humble for Bob to not take any credit for it, or as he says, a lot of credit for it, and just giving it all to Timo because he knows that if Timo didn't want to do it, he wasn't going to do it. But he did.
I do want to say though that, and I bring this up a lot. I give Bob a lot of credit for this. I think that, at least my impression is that Bob's message to Timo has always been consistent. You know, again, we can argue if that message was consistent for all the players, but for Timo, I think it's always been consistent. Yeah. And we're seeing the fruits of that right now.
And what better than just an all-star campaign and finally a bright spot for the San Jose Sharks. And possibly a selling point for Bob to get an extension. So we'll see.
Well, you know, if we get to that point where Bob gets extended, obviously the Sharks will probably have made the playoffs. Tomas Hertl, you know, in that case, maybe the Sharks are competitive enough where Tomas Hertl says to himself, hey, I think we can win here and win sooner here than I thought this past summer. A lot of it is going to be because Timo Meier.
Yeah. We thought it was going to be William Eklund, but we were just...
that was just hoping. That was a joke, yeah, because that's yeah. A lot to put on a 19-year-old.
Yeah. So, Shane, we're officially caught up in the Timo timeline, the Timo line.
The Timo line, yep.
We're at this game in Buffalo. Excuse me, I don't know why I keep wanting to say Buffalo. We're at this game here in Seattle, and Meier notches another goal.
Yep.
Him and Hurdle are just competing back and forth. They're just, you score a goal, then I score a goal, then you score a goal, then I score a goal. Because no one else apparently is going to score any goals for this Sharks team. Depth scoring completely inept, something I've been harping on since the beginning of the season. But the big question here, and I'll ask the question, and then I'll give my answer, And then obviously I'll let you give yours. Yours will be much more thorough than mine. But what can we learn from Meyer's explosion onto the scene? 25 years old, a really good start, bit of a lull the last few seasons, and now he's come into his own. What can we learn from this? Both as fans, as the Sharks organization, and just people in general. And my answer to that question was, if you try your best to never trade a three quarters on the dollar, because if you rewind just a few months ago, just half a year ago, Timo Meyer's allegedly on the block to New Jersey. Think of where this team would be right now without him.
And right, and you weren't getting back, you know, this wasn't going to be a one-for-one trade. You're not getting back Jack Hughes for Timo Meyer, you know. Maybe you're lucky you get Jesper Bratt back. I don't know. But you're not getting New Jersey's best.
Yeah, exactly. So never trade at three quarters on the dollar, especially with a player that you've invested not only just the draft capital, but you've invested the time into. And you know what his ceiling is in that sense. And second off, just have some damn patience, really. As Sharks fans, we're so spoiled over the last 20 years of just almost instant success, that instant gratitude. It's like we've had Amazon Prime delivery on the development on so many players. And we've gotten spoiled by team-friendly contract deals from iconic Hall of Fame players that have had good supporting cast in that sense, that we've never had to be patient enough to allow a player to come into their own. I've preached patience for Ryan Merkley. I've preached patience now for Timo Meyer. He was 23, 24 during a couple of bad years. And yes, peak NHL, you're looking at 25 to 27, maybe 28. But just have some patience and trust the process. So that's my learn from this. From this timeline that we've kind of, well, that's the lesson that I've kind of learned from this timeline with Timo.
Yeah, I gotta think back on it. I mean, that's a good point in terms of patience, and maybe the Sharks fans haven't had to do too much of that for a lot of reasons with younger players. Maybe because the Sharks haven't had a lot of really talented younger players, for the most part.
In truth, they've traded a lot of them away for current, like, given talent.
Yeah, or they've traded some of the draft picks away, too, for sure, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think what I get from this is that if you believe in a talent, you know, some players, maybe you're wrong about them, so you do have to trade them on three quarters on the dollar, but with Timo Meyer, though, even last year, you know, terrible season really for him, but we saw games where he was terrific. I wrote about one of those games in Los Angeles, I think in late March or April. He was great in that game. Bob Boehner called that the very best game that he's seen Timo Meyer play all year. And that game, what we're seeing this year is that game times 40, right? We're at game 41. So that game times 40. We've seen that basically from Timo Meyer most nights this year. But anyway, if you believe in the talent, then you have to trust that talent. And there are multiple examples of guys who kind of plateau at an early age and they struggle for a year or two and then they get back on track. And obviously, there was concern that, you know, Timo Meyer scored 30 goals in 2018-19. Like, was that the best we were going to get from Timo? And, you know, was he just going to go backwards for the rest of his career or just kind of stay as kind of a 20-goal-ish guy, second-line guy? You know, guy was always going to kind of tease you with his talent. I don't know. I'm trying to think of like a Dustin Penner or something like that. We're going to pull back some old examples. But a guy that's just going to tease you with his talent from night to night but just isn't a guy that you can count to bring it. Basically for a winning team, a supporting player at best, but not your star. And anyway, I wrote about this in the article from last year, why the Sharks trade Timo Meyer. And I mentioned players that seemingly had plateaued at an early age and then got back on track. And Nathan MacKinnon was an example that I used. And not saying that Meyer is MacKinnon, but MacKinnon won the Calder Trophy 2013-14. But then kind of struggled for the next 3 years. Actually averaged less points per game over the next 3 years than he did in his Calder season. In that kind of three-year down period for MacKinnon, he was averaging 0.66 points per game. And he's doubling that now, which is, you know, think about a guy that I'm sure there were a lot of Avalanche fans in that kind of 3 year loss period for MacKinnon. They're like, we got to trade this guy. Like, we, you know, he was number one pick. You know, we were counting on him to carry the franchise. You know, where has he been in you know, where is he? And, you know, I'm sure that they're happy that the Avs never got a good enough offer. And the Avs stayed patient. Another great example is Jonathan Huberdeau, who's having a fantastic season with Florida. And again, Huberdeau won the Calder in the lockout shortened 2012-13, but then slumped to 0.41 his next season. And, you know, rebounded since then, but especially the last three seasons, you know, obviously has hit his prime, has been better than point per game the last three seasons, and now including this one now, so the last four seasons. So overall, the point is that players take extra time sometimes. You know, development isn't always a linear path. You know, you have this hiccup, and for some players, it's a larger hiccup. You know, the MacKinnon example I gave you was a pretty long hiccup. Meyer, obviously, the last two seasons. Even on the Sharks, you look at Tomas Hertl, right? And Tomas Hertl came out of the gates as a rookie, phenomenal. And obviously the knee injury. So this is not so much on Hertl itself, but obviously the knee injury with Dustin Brown took him a bit to come back from, right? But Hertl, until 2018-19, actually, right? It took Hertl a few years to become that point per game player that I think all Sharks fans kind of anticipated or hoped that he would be, you know, when he was in the midst of that rookie season before Dustin Brown derailed it. And it took Hertl, what, like 3 years, right, or so, to get back to kind of the fulfilling his entire potential. And so, you know, I'm not saying never trade these guys. You know, if someone gives you a one-for-one offer for him, for a Timo Meyer, you know, then sometimes you got to take it. Or sometimes you may believe in the talent, but there's stuff, you know, on the inside that the guy's not working hard. He's not doing this. He's not doing that. Then you got to cut bait. So I'm not saying that you never do, but yeah, but definitely though, like you said, Nick, you know, be patient with guys. If you believe in a guy's talent, be patient with him. And sometimes you get rewarded. Sometimes you don't. You know, we're looking at it with Kevin LeBanc, obviously. I've always believed in his talent. I still do. But obviously it's been now, you know, he's hurt now. So it's been three seasons and running for him of not kind of fulfilling that potential that we saw in 2018-19.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for Kevin per se to continue to get that. I would kind of vary the difference mainly because of like draft capital that was given up for Kevin LeBanc compared to Timo Meyer. A lot of that goes into for no reason at all other than projected ceiling from, I believe, within organizations, like the leash for players are a bit longer for the first couple rounds of the draft as opposed to like a fifth or a sixth round pick. But once they show that potential, you know, they're going to get that leash extended. And especially in Kevin's case, him showing that potential alongside, you know, third line winger alongside Joe Thornton and Marcus Sorensen. So the Sharks are kind of without a choice but to continue to try to allow Kevin LeBanc to get back into that form, because they have no one else that's available in the organization to attempt to fulfill that role as well. So sometimes you're forced to have patience, and sometimes you have patience out of necessity. So you actually had just kind of moving into Timo's big game here, you had some historical context for the listeners as well.
Yeah. This was actually a segment that I was going to do for NBC, but they didn't use it. And so I think it's kind of interesting and worthwhile here. I was thinking that there were less than 10,000 people at SAP Center last Monday to watch Timo Meier score 5 goals. And obviously, we've seen, this has been a trend at SAP Center this year, the smaller crowds. You know, used to be a easy 17,000. You know, now we're talking, if we get to 11, 12,000, we're lucky. And I know that there are a lot of good reasons for this. COVID, lower expectations for the Sharks. Both really good reasons. If you're concerned about COVID or you just didn't think the Sharks were going to be good this year. Those are both very, very, very defensible positions. But I had to say, though, that this is an all-time great Sharks season that we're watching with Timo Meier. And yeah, we're only midway through the season, so who knows? You know, maybe his inconsistency is going to rear its head again, and he's going to kind of, falter down the stretch. Sharks can't afford that, but if he doesn't, though, for me, this is a season that is like Owen Nolan's 44-goal campaign in 1999-2000, or like Jonathan Chichu's Rocket Richard season in 2005-06. And, of course, Meier isn't going to score 50 goals like Chichu, 56 goals like Chichu. He's on pace for 42. But, just if you watch him, just think about just how important he is in every aspect of the Sharks' offense. You know, he's tied for the league in the team lead in goals. He leads the team in assist. He's always carrying the puck. So he does lead the team in zone entries and zone exits. There isn't anything that he isn't doing offensively for the Sharks right now.
Man, like you said, there's a reason why he's an all-star rep for the Sharks going.
Well,
it's
just a special, special season. And, I would say, and I've mentioned this a couple times on the podcast, that this is a much different Sharks team that we're watching. Yeah, they lost to the Kraken. Not a very good team. They shouldn't have lost, of course. And this isn't a great Sharks team by any stretch. So for them to lose to the Kraken isn't really that surprising. I mean, the Sharks are, low margin for error team. They have basically 3 guys who can score. 4 guys, I guess, Barabanov too. So 4 guys. They've got 4 guys who can score right now. It's going to be a struggle like this on a consistent basis because they do not have the secondary scoring, and there is honestly not a lot of hope that they're going to get that much more, at least at this point this season. Let's be honest. Let's look at what's been happening with this lineup, right? But all that said, though, the team competes hard. They're always in games. They're defending much better than last year. It's a team that's really worth watching, and Timo Meier especially. Like I said, I've had the privilege of being at all the home games and a number of the road games, watching Timo's season this year up close, and it's been just a real pleasure to cover. And it's like I said, he keeps it up. This is a really special Sharks season that you should watch in person at least a game or two this season. I'll say that.
There you go, Shang, rallying the war cry for more fans at SAP. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I expect my check in the mail, Jonathan Becker.
Yeah. And, this entire episode has been Timo Meier, right? Every week, though, we do here on the podcast, we do our Sport Logic Stat of the Week, where we try to take a stat either for a team or for a player, and we highlight that. Last week, I believe we did Brent Burns and just his impact on the game. Really quick, before I lose this little thought in my mind regarding the Sharks losing to the Seattle team that they very easily could have beat, I was watching the game alongside Neil Valapiano, who does Devil State of Mind for us. He actually did the watch along on our YouTube channel, the Hockey Podcast Network's YouTube channel. He did it for the Sharks this evening, and I gave him a little stat from Natural Stat Trick. It was the expected goals for the Seattle Kraken just after their second goal scored was only 0.88. So it was a bit rough for the Sharks in that one. But like you said, low margin for error team. But Myers just having one hell of a season. And to accent just how important he is and how much of the nucleus he is to the offense for the Sharks team, we're going to go over some stats, and you guys are going to be hearing some stats here from us that we've talked about before with players in the past. And so the first one, or I'm just going to list off everything that
he's just saying, we don't need to get into the exact numbers.
Yeah,
but
we're going to keep it short and sweet because if I list everything off, I'm just going to name every single statistic here on this sheet here.
Exactly.
But shot attempts per game, shots on net per game, slot shots per game, he's first in. Inner slot shots, he's only second behind Tomas Hertl, and it's not by much. And this is all on a per-game basis. Hertl's at 1.08. Timo's at 1.03. Closest one to those two is Jonathan Dahlin at 0.69. So that just kind of tells you where they're at, and they're in their league of their own, essentially, on this Sharks team. He's second behind Hertl in rush chances per game. He's first in cycle chances per game, forecheck chances per game, rebound chances per game, and he's the only forward that's worth mentioning, or he's in slot passes per game, obviously. Erik Karlsson's number one, Brent Burns is number two, and then Timo Meier is number three. And then Hobblegawatz is technically below him, but we're not going to count him on account of a small sample size. But Timo Meier is the best forward in that group. So you're talking about a guy here who completely dominates every single statistically offensive category in the game when he's on the ice. And I think it goes to show, Shane, it kind of reinforces your point there, him leading the team in assists, but mainly zone entries and zone exits, because it seems like the Sharks' zone entries and their puck management aren't the greatest here in the offensive zone. And one of the few guys that can do it with ease is Timo Meier.
And I know it's a sacrilege for me to have probably put Timo Meier's season that he's having right now in league with Jonathan Chychrun's 56 goals. But, let's keep in mind that Chychrun had Joe Thornton.
Yeah.
And so Chychrun's job was literally to go to the net and put in Jumbo's passes. Meier does not have that kind of he is getting to play with Tomas Hertl a lot, but Tomas Hertl, as great a player as he is obviously no Joe Thornton Hart Trophy caliber of a player. We have to be honest with ourselves here. Timo Meier is single-handedly doing a lot of stuff, carrying a lot of stuff that a Chychrun never had to even think about doing. And so I think it's very much up in the discussion. So even if Timo Meier doesn't end up close to 56 goals. One final stat I wanted to mention, it's not a Sportlogic one, but it's one of my favorite ones with Timo. Right now, there are just six players who are averaging over four shots a game this year. Six players. Nathan MacKinnon, Ovechkin, Austin Matthews, David Pastrnak, Kyle Connor, and Timo Meier.
That's some good company to be in there, Timo.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely.
I was just going to say, I believe Darren Stevens also tweeted out another stat, how he was either first or second, either in front of or behind Alex Ovechkin.
He was second in even strength points. Meier has, 39 now, I guess, right? And then Ovechkin has 41. But on the shots per game thing, and I think this is one of the reasons why Timo has found more success this year. Last year Meier was averaging 2.87 shots per game. So again, he's at over four now. So 2.87 last year, and it's not that Timo this year is wasting shots. Bob Boehner talked about it's easy to get in the zone and shoot from far away. Timo does do that sometimes, obviously. Timo is a shot volume guy, but Timo Meier is also among the league leaders in high danger shot attempts. I think he's top three, top five, or something like that. So he's getting high quality shots, more of them this year, too. And again, you know, any offensive category you can think of for the Sharks, there's a good chance that Timo Meier is leading it or he's second.
Yeah. And that just honestly stems from just how much he's grown defensively, and we've talked about it before.
Yep, that's a part of it too, yep.
And Bob talks about it as well. He's turned him into a 200-foot player, even though I think there's only technically 198 feet of ice, I think, in reality. But that's just how impactful he is. He creates 2 feet of ice out of thin air. So.
He's getting the puck himself in defensive zone, or he's in the right position to help out his teammates, and that becomes counterattack offense. You know, that becomes rush offense, which is obviously a big part of Timo Meier's game.
Yeah. He dodges the jab and hits you with his own. So you don't always got to throw haymakers to try to land those punches. Sometimes you got to dodge and hit him with a jab 18 times. So
yep.
Let's try to wrap this up here. We've been talking Timo here for quite a while here. We're going to talk about his future. We're going to go over his qualifying offer and kind of what that means.
Should we name this episode the Timo worship episode, or
yeah, we'll
shall we name a religion after him? Maybe Meyerism. Meyerism.
Yes, Meyerism. You score 5 goals, then you're officially inducted or baptized into the religion of Meyerism. But moving into Timo's future here, his qualifying offer at the end of his contract is interesting because it's $10 million, Shang.
Yep.
So that's elite. That's elite money. That's big time money, especially
money,
on a cap strapped team like the Sharks.
and this was a joke as recently as this offseason, because you look at what Timo Meier had been doing and that he was gonna get he was gonna be in line for a $10 million qualifying offer after what was it? 12 goals last year?
Yeah. No bueno. Sure, bud. Here's your bridge deal. that's I think this $10 million price tag is going to not so much rely on this season, but next season.
Both this season.
But I mean, he's already halfway through this year and he's going absolutely bananas bonkers, right? You know? So we're assuming he continues this level of play, this type of this pace, this production. His ability to repeat that production next season is what's going to be very, very key for this possible contract that he's going to be getting here. And this is an RFA, not a UFA. So offer sheets are incoming, but Shang, you have a couple of names here. Some, again, I'll use the word elite very easily here. Some elite players here that are signing for $10+ million at the end of their RFA.
Well, not the end of their RFA, while they're still RFA.
Oh, yeah, so. Excuse me. Yeah, that's my fault.
And yeah, very few players make that kind of money, you know, 10, at least right now. You know, $10 million plus is usually reserved for the unrestricted free agents, you know, open market. So the four players that make that much now, and they signed it while they're still in their restricted free agent years, are, you know, predictably Connor McDavid, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, and Jack Eichel. And so Meier, as good a season as he's having, you know, he's not in the McDavid or Matthews class. He is having a better season than Marner this year, and I think the jury is a little bit out on Jack Eichel, obviously because of his surgery and just his health status, right?
Mm-hmm.
But $10 million is a bit rich, and it's hard to see the Sharks qualifying that. But I would say, though, that Timo is having such a good season, and if he repeats it next year, that it does become actually interesting that we can actually have a conversation that maybe Timo Meier is worth $10 million. And again, this is not a conversation that we would have remotely had, a couple of off seasons ago. And so that's credit to Timo Meier and how he's kind of changed the conversation. You know, it was an ugly conversation as of this offseason, and it's become a good problem to have. But again, I don't think it's likely the Sharks will qualify that amount. You know, it's more likely that the Sharks and Timo Meier get to the point where, or they come to agreement before Timo Meier even becomes a restricted free agent, or the Sharks have to, you know, qualify him or not qualify him. And there are a ton of comps for Timo Meier that are close. And a lot of them signed in the same year that Timo Meier was a free agent in 2019. But you know, some of the comps that are close and for the Sharks to look at, you know, we have Mikko Rantanen, obviously, who signed $9.25 million per year in September 2019. You have Sebastian Aho, July 2019. And he signed for 8.5 after Montreal forced Carolina's hand. So that might give you some sense. And if you actually think about it, though, you know, Rantanen's total, Aho's total, and these were signed when these guys were younger and in 2019, like I said. So next year, actually, you know, $10 million may not be that wild. I mean, I don't think it's out of the question that the Sharks just qualify him. I don't think that's wild to say if he keeps up this pace. I know that sounds crazy. That's, you know, I can't believe that I'm saying it. I would have thought myself crazy if I had said this last year, but I mean, that's what the player is doing. And, you know, obviously, again, you know, the example I gave with Rantanen, that's going to be 3 years ago. You know, when Meyer's qualifying offer comes, actually, I'm 3. It's gonna be 4, yeah. Because yeah, 20, yeah. So 20, yeah. So it's 21. It's 20, 21, 22 now. Meyer's qualifying offer will come up at the end of the 2023 season. So Rantanen signed his 9.25 per contract in 2019. So. Again, yeah, if Timo keeps this up, actually, maybe the Sharks just qualify him. I don't know.
I'll give the Nick Bold prediction right here, and we'll wrap it up with this. If Timo Meier puts up back-to-back 40-goal campaigns, the Sharks will give him $10 million without a problem. And it'll be somewhere in the realm of a 6 to 8 year contract, and that will be one of the few and only good long-term deals that may be handed out if he can put back-to-back 40
campaigns.
Well,
again, giving anybody a long-term deal is always scary. And keep in mind that Timo, when he signs, is going to be older than, say, Connor McDavid when he signed his, or talking about the most recent kind of big RFA contract, or, you know, Jack Hughes, right? Jack Hughes is 21. So I don't know if I'm going to say it's going to be good or anything like that, but I would say that, you know, we started this conversation talking about there's only 4 players who make 10 mil, the McDavid Matthews class, mm-hmm. right? But when we talk about the under guys who are just below that, right? And, you know, we mentioned Rantanen and Aho, right? Just below that. And by the time we get to 2023, hopefully, you know, salary cap is a bit up, you know, revenue's up, people are getting to go back to games again. So more sellouts, people, you know, teams making more money. Basically, you know, inflation. $10 million doesn't really sound that wild right now. If, again, Timo keeps this up, you know, basically, like you said, back-to-back 40 or 35-ish goal seasons at point per game, carrying the offense like he has been. Again, doesn't sound that wild. I mean, look at, okay, Kirill Kaprizov, right? Just signed, 5 years, $45 million, so $9 million. That's not that far from 10.
Nope. No, and I agree. Salary cap increase could easily bump that 9 to 10, no problem. So,
yep.
Only time will tell.
Only Timo time, right? Only I beat you to it this time.
God damn it, he got me.
But that's going to do it for the Timo extravaganza episode, the Timo Meierism. You've all been baptized if you listen to the entirety of this podcast. You're in Meyerisms now, so you do have to make sure you pay.
You're automatically in Meyerism if you got through 90 minutes of all Timo, all the time talk.
Oh, yeah. We're just gonna.
You're an acolyte. You're an official acolyte.
The Timo Meyer Now podcast is what this is. We're gonna wrap this up, of course. Make sure you guys go give us a follow on Twitter. You can follow the podcast at SJ Hockey Now Pod. You can follow the network at HockeyPodNet, and you can follow myself at @NickFlora_. Shang.
You can find me at Shang_Peng and all my work at San Jose Hockey Now or NBC Sharks.
All right, folks. Until next time and until another 5-goal game for another player, make sure you all stay safe and stay hydrated.